What is rate-related bundled branch block? In essence, what we are referring to by use of this term is the development of bundled branch block in response to an increase in heart rate. That said, there are a few modifications that we should make to this definition. In addition to developing complete right or left bundle branch block, the rate-related conduction defect could be incomplete right bundle branch block with no more than minimal increase in QRS duration, or it could be development of left anterior or posterior hemiblock, either alone or in combination with right bundle branch block. That said, for simplicity, I'll continue to use the term rate-related bundle branch block. The reason for developing rate-related bundle branch block is simple. As heart rate increases, the time for recovery of one or more parts of the conduction system is reduced. If, for example, as heart rate increases, a rate threshold is reached whereby the left bundle branch has recovered, but the right bundle branch has not, then the patient will develop a rate-related right bundle branch block. This concept comes up all the time in the differential diagnosis of a regular wide tachycardia, for which diagnostic considerations include ventricular tachycardia, which should, of course, always be assumed until proven otherwise, but also the possibility that the rhythm is not VT, but instead that the rhythm could be supraventricular with QRS widening due to either a pre-existing bundle branch block or rate-related aberrant conduction. Let me clarify a few concepts. When we say aberrant conduction, we are essentially talking about a rate-related bundle branch block. The QRS complex becomes aberrant, that is, the QRS widens and undergoes a change in QRS morphology determined by that part of the conduction system that is still refractory due to the increase in rate. Aberrant conduction may be transient, occurring for as little as a single beat, as is commonly seen when a PAC, premature atrial contraction, occurs early enough that it falls during the relative refractory period, when part but not all of the conduction system has recovered. Or aberrant conduction may persist for minutes or longer, as might occur when dealing with a wide rhythm that is fast enough, say faster than 130 to 140 beats per minute or so. The faster the supraventricular tachycardia, the greater the chance that one or more parts of the bundle branch or hemiblock system will not have enough time to recover, with resultant QRS widening in the form of a bundle branch block or hemiblock. Most of the time, we don't think of this type of aberrant conduction as being rate-related, because the first time we see the patient, the wide tachycardia is already ongoing. This highlights a key point about rate-related bundle branch block, namely that we cannot make this diagnosis with certainty unless we see the patient at a time when the heart rate was slower and the QRS was of normal duration, and then we see QRS widening due to development of some form of conduction defect at the moment that the heart rate increases, and then we see the QRS complex return to its normal width and normal morphology as heart rate slows back down. As might be imagined, it is rare that we see this entire sequence of events, which is why it is often quite difficult to make a definitive diagnosis of true rate-related bundle branch block. I'll mention some caveats. In my experience, many providers think of just two possibilities for the etiology of a regular wide tachycardia, these being ventricular tachycardia or SVT with aberrant conduction. All too often, the third possibility, which is SVT with a pre-existing bundle branch block, is forgotten. This underscores the utility of finding a prior ECG on the patient, since if bundle branch block was previously present during sinus rhythm, then QRS widening is not the result of rate-related aberrant conduction, but is instead a permanent bundle branch block that existed before the patient developed tachycardia. Caveat number two. Although rate-related bundle branch block most often develops in response to an increase in heart rate, on occasion, the patient may develop a bradycardia-dependent form of bundle branch block. This bundle branch block is still rate-related, but it is paradoxically related to a slowing of the heart rate, sometimes known as phase 4 block. The mechanism of this bradycardia-dependent form of bundle branch block is complex. It is not a common conduction disorder, and most patients who develop this have severe underlying heart disease. But it is worthwhile being aware of the fact that on occasion, slowing of the heart rate may be the reason the patient develops a bundle branch block. Finally, I want to describe the situation that is most often thought of when using the term rate-related bundle branch block. Here, the conduction defect develops in response to an increase in heart rate, but the increase is not marked. For example, the QRS complex may be narrow and normal during sinus rhythm at a rate of 70 beats per minute, but slight increase in the heart rate to 80 or 85 beats per minute may be enough to produce a rate-related conduction defect, be this right or left bundle branch block or one of the hemiblocks. Recognition of this form of rate-related bundle branch block can be easy if the rhythm is sinus and we see the QRS widen as the heart rate increases. But if the first time we see the patient is with sinus rhythm at a rate that is already at 85 per minute, there will be no way to distinguish between rate-related bundle branch block due to a rate increase from 70 to 85 per minute versus a permanent bundle branch block that was there from the start. That said, why should we care? There are several reasons. First, unlike right bundle branch block, which sometimes may be seen in otherwise healthy adults, the finding of left bundle branch block is virtually always associated with some form of significant heart disease. Clinical implications from developing an intermittent form of bundle branch block with no more than a modest increase in heart rate are similar to the clinical implications of developing a permanent bundle branch block. This is because it is simply not normal to develop a bundle branch block at a rate as modest as 80 per minute. So, knowing that your patient, who usually lives at a slow heart rate in the 60s, will develop left bundle branch block when their heart rate goes up to 75 or 80 beats per minute, can serve as an indicator that your patient most probably has underlying heart disease. The other reason to care about recognizing the phenomenon of rate-related bundle branch block arises when your patient is in atrial fibrillation, in which case there are no P waves to help you distinguish between sinus rhythm with bundle branch block conduction versus QRS widening due to a rate-related bundle branch block that will look like a ventricular rhythm because P waves are absent with atrial fibrillation. Final pearl. The reason ECG diagnosis of rate-related bundle branch block can be so challenging is that the rate of onset of the block is not necessarily the same as the rate of offset. For example, your patient may conduct with a normal QRS complex up until a rate of 80 per minute, at which point the QRS complex may widen due to the onset of a rate-related bundle branch block. But this doesn't mean that the bundle branch block will go away as soon as the heart rate drops below 80 per minute. Instead, the heart rate may need to decrease a good bit below 80 per minute before the rate-related conduction defect will disappear, perhaps to as low as 50 or 60 per minute. So it's easy to see how challenging it sometimes may be to prove that the cause of QRS widening is rate-related bundle branch block.